Welcome to the Blue Sky Podcast,
brought to you by Cambridge University Science Magazine.
I'm Ruby.
And I'm Shimone.
Every 2 weeks, we speak to local researchers, university staff and students, and anyone who works in science to learn about their research and activities, hear about the work that they do, and uncover what goes on behind the scenes.
If you want to get in touch with a question, suggestion, or just want to be featured on the podcast, just drop us a tweet. Our handle is at BlueSciPod.
And you can also email us at bluescipodcast@gmail.com.
The Blue Sky Podcast is sponsored by Griner Bio One, who supply laboratory, diagnostic, and medical products to research institutions, higher education, the NHS, and others across the UK. For details of their full product range, visit www.gbo.com.
The Blue Sky Podcast is sponsored by Nature Careers. If you get a chance, take a look at Nature Careers' new funding website, which collates thousands of international funding and grant opportunities. So whether you're looking for an undergrad or postgrad scholarship, fellowships, or funding for a project, try a search at naturecareersfunding.com. Welcome to this week's episode. So this week we spoke to Thomas Parton, a PhD student in the Bio-Inspired Photonics group at the University of Cambridge. And Tom's work is really, really interesting because he uses confocal microscopy to analyse 3D structure in a bacteria that form specific biofilms. And these biofilms can appear iridescent when all of the bacteria are grouped together in this biofilm. And he studies what the bacteria do structurally in order to achieve this iridescence. So we speak about all about iridescence and structural colour in nature during this episode. And for me, it was something really, really interesting and inspiring because it's not something I'd ever really thought about before. So really, really hope you enjoy this episode. So welcome, Thomas Parton. You're part of the Bio-Inspired Photonics group at the University of Cambridge. So would you like to start us off by telling us a little bit about your PhD research and what you've been doing?
Sure. So yeah, thanks for inviting me on the show. So broadly speaking, in our lab, we study how organisms use structure to control their appearance, control how they interact with light. And so in particular, one of the projects I've been working on in my PhD is looking at structural colour in biofilms of bacteria. So this is a collaboration that we do with a company called Hookmine in the Netherlands. And the sort of simple explanation is we have these bacteria, and when we grow them on agar plates, we see that the bacterial colonies are iridescent, bright green or bright orange. And what's really remarkable about these biofilms is that a single bacterium itself is not colourful. It doesn't contain a pigment or a dye that gives it the colour, but it's just the way that the bacteria pack together in a dense colony that produces the colour from their collective structure. And so in my PhD, I've been using a technique called confocal microscopy to observe the individual bacteria moving around in the colony in real time, in 3D. And from looking at this, we're trying to understand how the individual interactions of the bacteria influence the large scale structure and how it appears.
Mm-hmm. So when you say structural color and you talk about structural color, could you tell us a bit what the different ways that we might generate color are? So you mentioned some like paint or pigments. What are the other ways, and could you give us some examples of different types of ways that we see color? Because as a, you know, just someone that's, I don't know, looking, might not realize the different ways that we might be able to see different colors.
Sure, yeah. So I think most people, when they think of color, are probably familiar with things that absorb light. So for example, if you're wearing a red jumper, then the jumper contains a dye, which is absorbing some of the wavelengths of light and not others. And what comes out is the stuff that didn't get absorbed. And similarly, in nature, we know that leaves in general are green because they can contain chlorophyll. And so the point here is that some light goes in and not all of the light comes back out again. And the color derives from that. In the case of structural color, we're talking more about light interference. We're talking about this, the light waves interacting with the material in different ways, which causes the waves to interfere constructively or destructively. So we observe certain colors or others. So the example that's probably familiar to most people is a soap bubble has these beautiful green, blue and pink sort of colors, and these arise from thin film interference because you have a thin layer of a sort of watery bubble with air inside and outside. And so when we talk about structural color, we're generally talking about patterning a material in some sort of regular periodic pattern in such a way that you cause light interference to produce a particular color. And quite often this effect is also angle independent. So again, another example people are probably familiar with is a CD or a DVD. Because of these pattern of the grooves in the CD, you get a kind of rainbow sort of diffraction effect. And as you tilt the CD, you see the color that you observe is going to change. And so similarly with these bacterial colonies, we find that they're this beautiful, in general, this beautiful bright green, but only from particular angles. And if you look from another angle, sometimes you don't see any color at all.
In a way, so are the bacteria organizing themselves in a way that interferes with the light so that they then appear iridescent, which is why as a collective they appear iridescent, but individually they don't? Is that the sort of concept of it? Okay, that's really cool.
Maybe I should explain that the bacteria themselves are sort of rod shaped, mm-hmm. sort of cylindrical. The point is, when we talk about light, one of the ways we can describe how light interacts with the material is with a refractive index, this number that sort of describes how light will travel through the material. And the point is that the bacteria have one refractive index and the medium around them, which is a sort of aqueous medium, is a different refractive index. And when the rod-shaped bacteria sort of pack together closely, they create, I sort of imagine them a bit like sort of Pringle cans, actually, they're sort of long cylinders. And the point is when they pack together in one direction, they all sort of tend to line up with one another. And then in the opposite sort of cross section, they form a hexagonal packing. They're sort of, you can imagine sort of circles sort of stacked together on top of each other in a kind of sort of triangular or hexagonal pattern. And because they form this structure, the light interference is going to be produce this sort of green color in the right direction. But the point is that the color really depends on how far apart the bacteria are and on their refractive index. So for example, one of the pieces of work that's previously been done in our group is to genetically modify the bacteria. And by doing this, you can change how they interact and you can change the spacing between the bacteria and therefore change the color. So you can, it's normally green, but we can make it blue or red or something else.
So I guess instead of having a color that derives from some kind of molecule absorbing that energy, you're instead changing the path that the light has to travel in by putting obstacles or taking them out and changing the shape that the light travels. And trying to figure out, I guess, how the bacteria change that little labyrinth that the light has to go through.
one of the key words that I haven't said so far is photonic crystal. So this kind of structure is what we call a photonic crystal, because the point is that the light having to travel through these areas of different refractive index is actually the same way that an electron, when it travels through a crystal, experiences different patterns of in the electric potential. And so this leads to a kind of band structure where the electron can travel easily with certain energies and not with others. And so similarly, we find that the light of certain wavelengths can travel through the structure easily, but it's prevented from traveling through at other wavelengths, which gives rise to reflection of those wavelengths, which gives rise to the color. And yes, when we talk about I said we study the appearance of these biofilms, I mean sort of more generally, not just the color, but also a kind of the sort of texture and the angle dependence of the color. And that really depends on how the bacteria are interacting with each other and the sort of appearance or the sort of arrangement of the bacteria over different length scales. So locally, they can be packed together in this hexagonal form, and this can form sort of one crystal domain. But then over a larger scale, we find that these crystal domains are not necessarily aligned relative to each other. And so actually, when you look at these colonies under the microscope, you see it almost looks like little iridescent flakes. You know, different domains will be very bright at one angle and less bright at other angles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really cool. So the bacteria that you work with are flavobacteria. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right. All my microbiology people are probably screaming at me right now.
I'm also not a microbiologist, so I also don't know, I'm afraid.
Yeah. So I was just wondering, with regard to them forming biofilms and these biofilms exhibiting these sort of quite cool physical kind of phenomena where you get this iridescent appearance, how can kind of learning about the way they arrange themselves or the way that they present in that way, what can we learn from that, and what are the sort of applications of understanding how they behave and how all of this works?
So that's a really good question. So for me, coming from a physics background, I think I'm personally really interested in just fundamentally understanding how the bacteria interact and how their local behavior determines the large scale structure. So there's a lot of work that's been done on fundamentally understanding bacteria as a kind of active matter system. And so from a fundamental point of view, it's super interesting. But then more generally, people are really looking at using this kind of photonic bacteria as a material. So two ideas that we're exploring in our group are to use them as a kind of biosensor and to use them as a kind of paint. So when I say biosensor, I mean that the bacteria and their appearance really depends on their local environment. So for example, we find that if you change the biopolymer that you feed them, basically if you change their food, you can also change the color that they appear. For some reason, this changes how they pack together. And so one idea is that we could put the colony somewhere and use it as a kind of test for the presence of certain compounds. The other idea that I mentioned is kind of using them as a paint. Well, the fact is that the bacteria don't need to be alive to be iridescent. The iridescence comes from this refractive index. It comes from the optical properties of the bacteria. And actually, if we, embedded everything in a, if we basically froze everything and killed the bacteria, they would still be iridescent. So one idea is to kind of use them as a sort of a paint the nice thing is that obviously the bacteria are made purely from natural sustainable materials, so it could be a really cool kind of biodegradable paint. Mm-hmm. I should also say that these bacteria are harmless to humans, so there's no risk if kids go and start licking the paint anything like that.
I guess is the benefit of structural color as opposed to, let's say, pigment color, that it would never really run out, because it would, would it degrade over time? Like, I guess as long as the structure doesn't change, the color is always there. It would still be bright no matter how long it's been, illuminated by light or whatever, as long as you didn't change that microstructure. Is that why people are interested in these kinds of materials?
Yes, that's one of the things that's really useful about them. And perhaps this is why they are so prevalent in the natural world. Mm-hmm. Because if you can make color from structure, then any material can be a colorful material. There's actually one demo that we do for outreach for children, where we use a mold to make iridescent chocolate. Because if you pattern the chocolate in the right way, you can make mm-hmm. it a shiny blue color.
Oh, wow.
This is perhaps why it's so common in nature, because then you can use any material that's already there to produce color. So this is why in, for example, birds and beetles, mother of pearl and many other areas, like fairly common polymers, things like cellulose and chitin, things which were already there, can be turned to this use. But then the disadvantage of structural color is that if you disturb the structure, you lose the color, which is something that the problem that you don't really have with pigments. So again, with going back to the blue iridescence of the chocolate bar, if the kid then goes and licks the chocolate bar and they disturb the structure, the color disappears. As you said, one of the advantages is that if you can preserve the structure, it won't degrade over time. So it's not sensitive to, for example, ultraviolet light, which is normally a problem for a lot of dyes.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's really interesting.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm sort of struck by this, the way of studying these, because so I work with bacteria and I'm kind of looking at it from the other angle. And I think it's really cool that what you were saying about just modifying the bacteria in a way so that they arrange themselves differently and they're therefore give a different color. And I think that could be really interesting, just generally understanding biofilm formation as well, and the way that certain you know, species of bacteria organize themselves, because biofilms are a massive issue in medicine in terms of like surgery, if you've got implants, if you've got anything like that. And it's just really, I don't know, it's just really struck me as a really cool way of being able to study the effects of interrupting biofilm formation in quite a visual way. So you know it's disrupted because it's a different color. So yeah, that's really, really interesting. And you, the apparatus that you use to study this is confocal microscopy. So I don't know how many of our listeners are particularly familiar with confocal, but would you give a bit of an overview as to actually how you get some of these images and how you actually manage to visualize these bacteria?
Sure. So I think most people are probably familiar with a conventional optical microscope, you know, the kind of thing that you can find in a lot of high schools and a lot of sort of undergrad labs. So confocal is based on the same kind of principles, but without going into too much detail, by modifying the sort of setup of the microscope, you can really choose to focus on a very small area, not just in the XY direction, not just in the plane, but also actually sort of in the depth of the material. And in particular, one thing you can do is you use a laser to scan over the sample. So rather than viewing the whole image at once, you scan pixel by pixel over the image, and you can basically construct an image of your sample in 2D. But the advantage of confocal is that it also allows you to focus in the Z direction, in the depth as well. So actually, if you have a sample with some interesting arrangement of bacteria, for example, in 3D, then by scanning also through the depth, you can get a complete 3D map of the positions of the bacteria. I should mention that this, to make this really accurate, you can fluorescently label the bacteria and then use a laser to excite the fluorescence and then capture the emitted light. So that's what we're doing. We use a strain of these Flavobacterium IR1 that expresses a fluorescent dye. And then it's really nice. I remember the first time I ever tried this, it was a bit of a random experiment where we knew that the bacteria expressed the fluorescent protein, but we weren't sure if it was going to work. And the first time that I put it into the confocal and turned it on, I immediately got fantastic images where I could resolve, you know, I could see individual bacteria swimming around and I could see their position throughout, a really dense colony. That was one of those moments in my PhD where I was, you know, really super excited because for once something just worked the first time. It was already working really well.
That's amazing, especially having done a bit of microscopy myself and even just finding them and getting them in a nice sort of a way that you can see them properly and they look nice and it's very pretty. Like, yeah, that's really, really cool. And I guess another added bonus of confocal is that they can be alive. And, you know, I think that's really important as well if you're looking at them. And it's super cool. And I just wondered as well, obviously you're coming at it from a physics point of view. So, but is so much interlaced with the biology. So as a physicist yourself, have you had to do any of the biology behind it? You know, you've got a GM strain. Did somebody make that for you? Or did you have to liaise with someone? Like, how far do you have to reach into the whole biology side of things for your project?
That's a good question. I would say that I don't have to do a lot of the biology side. Someone else prepares the dishes for me and I'm doing the imaging. Personally, I'm quite glad of that because although I'm interested in the bacteria, I'm definitely not super interested in preparing them. And I suppose on the other end, maybe the person preparing them wouldn't be so interested in doing all of the data analysis and so on that I do. So I think it's actually one of the things I really like about my group is that it's a we're quite a diverse and interdisciplinary group within our lab. So we have a whole spectrum of people from purely sort of microbiologists and purely chemists, all the way over to people who are sort of hardcore optical physics people who never step into the lab, and you know, people who purely do simulations and things like this. And it's great because I think, you know, before I did this project, I wasn't even aware that these biofilms existed and that they could have such cool physical properties. And so it's kind of nice that by both of these kind of people being together in the same research environment, we're able to collaborate together and do projects that we never would have been able to do on our own. So I think, yeah, this kind of thing is really a testament to the benefits of interdisciplinarity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's the kind of thing that like would literally, like you said, be impossible for someone that didn't know about the other side to think about, right? You could be a biologist growing these and be like, oh, they're packing in a fun way. And that would be the extent of that, you know, discussion. You wouldn't necessarily be like, oh, maybe this will cause iridescence and we could use this to generate a new kind of paint. Whereas like on the other side, you know, you might be working with normal, with like conventional liquid crystals or looking at kind of soft matter systems that have different arrangements, but you wouldn't necessarily be like, there's that bacteria that I looked at on Tuesday. Like it's so interesting. And I guess there's probably so many different ways in which you like future, like there's probably so many future projects that could arise from these kinds of conversations. Was the bacteria project something like that? Like, was it a bit random that you came across it, or was it like, how did you end up choosing to do this? What was the inspiration from?
Yeah, so it is a little bit like what you said, because I was already doing some confocal work, but for a completely different project, not on living organisms. And so the point is, I already had access to the confocal, I was already trained, I knew what I was doing. And then, yeah, the people in my lab said, hey, we have these bacteria. And up until that point, they had already done some really fantastic characterization using optical methods and using electron microscopy, but they hadn't really looked at studying the 3D structures using confocal microscopy. And so they gave me the dish and they said, oh, could you have a look at this? And like I said, fantastically, it just worked straight away. And I think that first session, I ended up sort of sitting there for like 6 or 7 hours because I had that feeling that, you know, oh my God, this is working and I need to make hay while the sun shines. I need to, you know, take advantage of this. Because as you mentioned before, one of the advantages of confocal is that you can see the bacteria moving in real time and also see their local structure. Whereas with the previous methods, for example, electron microscopy, it's for these living organisms, it's a destructive technique. We have to freeze them, you know, for cryo electron microscopy, or we have to sort of basically stop them. So we only get a frozen sort of snapshot of their positions at one given time. Whereas with confocal, we can really, really see them living and moving around live. And so, yeah, I occasionally make these sort of animated GIFs and I share them with the people in my lab. But it's just sort of cool to see the bacteria moving around.
That's amazing.
Yeah, definitely. And I just had a question that you may have already covered, but I was just wondering, you might have already covered this anyways, but the way that your flavor bacteria arrange themselves to give you this iridescent appearance, is that patterning? So if you think of them as just little shapes that are sort of forming this pattern that gives you the iridescence, is that something that's like an arrangement that's novel to the bacteria, or is it the arrangement itself that's quite common throughout nature where you see iridescence? I don't know if that makes any sense whatsoever.
I think I understand what you're saying. So
yeah.
Yes, actually, it's a rather general phenomenon that if I have rod-shaped things and I try to pack them together, that they will tend to form this kind of structure, because the rod-shaped things will pack together most efficiently if they're all aligned with each other. And then in 2D, the circles will pack together most densely if they're in this kind of hexagonal packing. Mm. So it's not entirely surprising that they form this kind of structure. And in fact, when I first saw this, it was amusing for me because I had actually read a paper about ducks, about mallard ducks, you know, in particular. So, you know, the males have a green head, the feathers on the head are sort of an iridescent green. actually the kind of structure that you see in the head of a male mallard duck is the same kind of structure that the bacteria are forming. It's ultimately, it's a sort of hexagonal packing of rod-shaped objects. So this kind of structure does actually occur quite commonly in these natural iridescent systems.
Mm-hmm. No, that's so cool. So I guess wherever you have sort of rods stacked in a certain way, you're going to get that phenomenon.
It's likely that this sort of thing will happen, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, another question is just why? Why do the bacteria form this way? Is it just that we're squeezing them together? You know, they're forced together because they're crowded in the colony and they just naturally do this, or do they really want to? Because they do have a certain amount of control about their orientation and position relative to the other bacteria. They have this extracellular matrix, so they do have some control over their environment. So presumably they, you know, perhaps they do want to form this structure because iridescence or structural color in nature does have a number of practical applications, whether it's for dazzling, for mating displays, or occasionally for camouflage. But in the case of the bacteria, it's not clear what benefit, what evolutionary benefit the iridescence might confer.
Yeah, whether it's just almost like a byproduct of them in the way they arrange, or whether, it's sort of evolutionary. There's an evolutionary advantage to that iridescence. No, it's a really cool sort of area to think about. And yeah, like you said, it's quite common across nature, so it must be there for a reason. So yeah,
I was actually going to ask, because you said that all of this like biofilm stuff was things that you hadn't really heard about before you did this project. And so when you chose to do your PhD, coming from a physics background, what made you choose to work on something so different from what you were working on before? I guess, did you know that you would be interested in it, or how was that?
Yeah, actually, when I say my background is physics, maybe I should clarify. So in fact, my background was really in theoretical high energy particle physics. So completely different. Yeah, the first time I came to Cambridge was to do a master's in in DAMP, the Applied Maths and Theoretical Physics Department, working on, you know, general relativity and quantum field theory and so on. And this was really what I was interested in, because I was interested in sort of fundamental physics and really understanding, the mechanisms of the universe. But in the end, although I found that stuff really interesting, I felt that I wasn't entirely happy doing a PhD in this area, because I felt like the theories were so removed from experimental verification. I didn't like the fact that, Higgs, the one of the theorists who developed this theory, the Higgs boson, came up with his theories in the 1960s, and then it didn't get experimental validation until the 2010s. And for me, you know, I don't want to come up with a theory and then sit around for 50 years just to wait if maybe it's correct. So I decided I wanted to do something a bit more experimental, and also I just like being in the lab. Actually, I like being sort of doing hands-on stuff, and I think optics in general has always really fascinated me. So I was keen to do something like that, and so I gravitated towards the group, the bio-inspired photonics group in the chemistry department. But even when I joined the group, it was not to do this bacterial biofilms project. That's something that came later. So I think I do tend to sort of go where my interest takes me. And so I'm very glad to be working on this bacteria stuff, because it's really cool.
Super cool. And I was just wondering, so you've moved quite dynamically between subfields in physics, and you're sort of now at the boundary between biology and physics. In terms of the future, when you have finished your PhD, what are your plans? Are you going to do a postdoc, or may you move into the sort of more applied side of things, or what are your plans?
At the moment, I intend to apply for postdocs. I think that I'm most interested in a research career. It's when I started my PhD, I was very confident that I wanted to go into academia. Now I am somewhat confident, less confident than I was before, but it's still the most likely thing I think I'll do, because although academia certainly has its downsides, I think overall it's worth the sacrifices that it sometimes requires of you. So I certainly want to go into academia. As for what topic I would go into, I'm still not entirely sure. But I think, yeah, certainly something in the area of sort of photonics, like optical physics, would really interest me. Something like working on these bacteria and the sort of biophysics of understanding their interactions is also something that I could see myself doing. So
yeah, especially when, like, when you hear about projects like this and like the success of interdisciplinary groups and how you can come up with, you know, new projects, new science that no one else could have, just because you're able to put all those people together from all those different backgrounds. But you need those people to actually be, you know, open-minded and be able to speak to each other in these all these different languages that are, you know, not understood by other fields. And it does take, like, you know, having, like, it is an effort to venture outside of that comfort zone. But I think that so many good things happen when we all kind of try to do something a bit different for once, I guess.
Brilliant. Well, I think we're actually nearly running out of time. So thanks so much for chatting to us about all of your PhD work. And chatting about something that I've never heard of, and I doubt a lot of our listeners will have heard of. So thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you both. This has been a lot of fun.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode. I really hope you enjoyed it. We certainly did, and it was really great to hear about how these different types of bacteria can form biofilms that are actually iridescent, and how this pattern occurs in other areas of nature. So if you want to get involved with the podcast or have any questions or comments, we're at BlueSciPod on Twitter, and you can email us at bluescipodcast@gmail.com. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.